from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. 3-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh yeah.
Boyle gets behind the center. Jarrett Patterson takes a knee, and the preseason is over. The Texans concluded by beating the Rams 17-15. The opener 2 weeks away. Bring on Indy. Road tilt to start the 2024 campaign. Texans will wind it down to 53 men by Tuesday, and they wrap it up strong with a 2-point win over the Rams today.
You can hear the pep in Mark Vandermeer's step, man. He's ready for Indy. He hates Indy. He hates Indy.
I think he called Indy roadkill.
He said roadkill. He said road tilt, but it is more fun to think roadkill.
I like to think you were going on the road and we're about to mow down Indy.
Yes.
Roadkill.
Like a squirrel.
Yeah, like a flattened, just a bunch of tire tracks over all those clowns.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you can hear the pep and Vandy step there. Mark Vandermeer on the call on Saturday. Well, 17,
it would be fitting. I feel like 25% of the population of Indiana looks at roadkill as a delicacy.
So yes.
We'd be feeding the, just one of the many more charitable works that the McNair family does is feeding the people of Indiana with roadkill.
Right. 25% of the population sees it as a compliment. Like, thanks. Yeah, roadkill.
One was killed by a diesel, I think. Mm-hmm. I think a hint of, oh.
Mm-hmm. The caviar of roadkill. How are you?
It's less than 3 days old.
It's still fresh.
Sick weirdos up there.
How you feeling, man? How you doing?
I feel good. I've got a little bit of angst about these cuts that are coming up. I did a little exercise yesterday where I went through and this has been a very competitive training camp, but I think a lot of it's been concentrated mostly at places like the running back position, the wide receiver position. Mm-hmm. There are some other positions on the team where, after going through all of the potential cuts, I realize, all right, you know what? We're not actually as deep as I'd like it to be. I had zero emotional attachment to any of the potential interior offensive line or offensive tackle cuts.
Yep.
The linebackers, I think, I wish I'd been a little bit more miserable about potential cuts there. So there's some positions that are very hotly contested, and then there's others where I think we might be looking to somebody outside the team as a backup in some of those spots.
I got my 53 right here that I did yesterday for the podcast, for the Utopia podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Drew it up on the back of a cocktail napkin / piece of paper here. And corner was the one where I'm like, ooh, wow. It drops off quick after Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter. And B, I can really see why they're throwing Jalen Petrie at slot corner. It's not just that's where Petrie might be best suited. Like, I don't know that he's I don't know how good the solutions are at corner right now.
Well, yeah, I don't know, though, too. I think part of that is that, for one, you know, PJ's more of a hybrid linebacker slash safety than he is a safety slash cornerback. I'm okay with Dez King or Miles Bryant if they end up being the slot corner. I think, like, Dez didn't help himself at all with that muffed punt or that missed tackle in the game the other day. I think those guys are in competition there. But just overall depth, yeah, if you're gonna keep six cornerbacks or so, there's not anybody you get really genuinely excited about.
No, I had five corners and five safeties on mine just because, yeah. I have Petrie listed as a safety. He's sort of like,
okay,
it's like 5.5 and 4.5, you know, yeah. What I mean? So I won't go through my whole 53 because I think once you and I get done doing these couple of hours of radio, we'll have fleshed out a lot of where we feel on these things, Seth. And again, the Texans do win that game 17-15 if you care about the final score. I think the biggest storyline to me, and you touched on it, is the running back position. And we said on Thursday and Friday of last week, like, the possibilities of what could happen with Damian Pierce on Saturday ranged from doesn't play at all, in street clothes alongside other guys who have earned starting roles on this team. It still feels like Damian has work to do that, or he plays the whole first half and gets as many touches as Cam Akers ends up getting in the game. Akers had 10 touches in the game and was still in the fourth quarter returning kicks.
That's what was really interesting about it is that, man, I felt like the running backs, you could see where, you know, Nick Caserio had said on the Pat McAfee show that there were probably five or so guys where it was really a real competition going into that last game. And if you look at the way they handled the running backs, every one of them was a target in the passing game.
Yep.
You saw British Brooks used as a fullback. You saw, as you mentioned, Cam Akers being used throughout the entire game. I think they really wanted to get a feel for all of this. And I think a couple of things might have come from it. If I watched that game and I was genuinely trying to make a decision, then Cam Akers is on this team.
Gotta be, right?
I mean, he checked all the boxes in terms of things you want to see. That one cutback against the grain on a zone run, which he did last week as well. He was used as a receiver. And then he, who may have been the smallest running back out there other than maybe J.J. Taylor, was probably the most physical guy on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he trucked Jason Taylor III, I have no idea if he's related to Jason Taylor, the Dolphin, on the sideline. When he was going out, every chance he had for contact, he lowered his shoulder and went after it. Like, he was trying to prove something. And, and then that spin move, that 3.5 spin moves, which, Sean, I know from the Olympics, that move gets named after him now.
It's an Akers?
It's an Akers 1, yes.
And he did not have the twisties. At all. He was all about spinning and spinning and spinning. That was a fourth down play, too. I know it's a preseason game, but you're playing it like it's a real game. That was 4th and 3, had to have it. Catches the ball, dismisses the first guy with a nice little juke, and then spins. We'll play the audio from all this a little bit later. This is my big question with Cam Akers. If he's not on the team, why the hell did you bring him in the first place?
I know, because, like, this is exactly what you would. What did I call it? I called it an experiment because he's coming off of a second Achilles tendon tear. I cautioned everybody. You know, look, he's coming off a second Achilles tendon tear. He wasn't really that good after the first one, and so it's an experiment. It's a cheap experiment, and they'll see. Maybe there's upside there, and I feel like every reason I was skeptical, and I still would be just because of, you know, injury history
Sure.
But as far as the guy on the field, from the moment he showed up, there hasn't been a single moment where I've thought that guy looks like he's recovering from an Achilles tendon tear. If you had asked me, if I knew nothing about the Texans, and I went out to that game on Saturday, and you said, hey, try to pick out the guy who had an Achilles tendon tear 9 months ago, Cam Akers would have been dead last. He would have been the last guy that I thought. Well, certainly not the little guy that's pulling off a, what does that end up being, a 1050 or whatever?
Exactly.
When he's spinning or trucking guys on the sideline or cutting back against the grain. So I'm all on board the Cam Akers train right now. I don't think that means that he's going to lead the league in rushing or anything, but he provides something that I haven't seen the other running backs on this roster in the preseason provide.
I'll be legitimately disappointed if he's not on the team. This was D'Amico Ryans on Saturday after the game. Very first question right out of the chute, he was asked, why didn't Dameon Pierce play in this game?
I didn't play Dameon because I've seen enough from Dameon in practice and everything, so I've had a good look at Dameon.
All right, so no effusive praise, not a long answer, short answer.
Yeah,
I asked him
earlier in the... Yeah.
You've pointed out that there could be two reasons for it. He could have made the team, or he could be on the trading block, one or the other.
It's funny that D'Amico gave that answer, and I think a lot of people are having a very polarizing response to it, too. Some people, like I did a live stream about this, and some people said, Seth, you silly fool. You might be pretty, but you ain't so smart. Obviously, they're planning on trading him the way he gave that answer. He said, we've seen all we need to see from him. But I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. In normal, if it were other coaches, I might say that. If it was another situation, that would be my first reaction too. But I think this team last year stuck with Dameon for far too long at the beginning of the season, waiting for it to click. And D'Amico and others have been effusive in their praise about how Dameon looks in practice. And it just makes me nervous that maybe D'Amico and Nick have a blind spot for Dameon Pierce. I could understand having a blind spot for him because you absolutely love everything about the kid except for the way he's currently running the football, whether it's good blocking or bad. You know, I'd asked him earlier in the week what Damian's biggest obstacle was, and, I mean, D'Amico said bad blocking. Like, he hasn't had good blocking. This is a guy that, remember, D'Amico very rarely criticizes players in press conferences, and he threw the whole line under the bus in that instance.
At the expense of Pierce, yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like that's what makes me nervous, that they are just emotionally invested in Dameon Pierce, and it's clouding their judgment. I get the contention that was just coach speak and they're planning on trading him. I hope that's what they're doing, but I just don't know.
Let's compare. We just heard the answer, very short answer about why Dameon didn't play. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game on the performance of Cam Akers.
Cam has done a really nice job since we got him late there in training camp, but he's stepped in, he's done a really nice job, and everyone sees, like, when he gets the ball in his hands in the games, he's able to make defenders miss, and he's able to continue to press forward and make plays. So, exciting, right? And it's tough, right? And it's also, I love that it's tough to make these decisions because that means you have a good football team. And when it's not just set, you know, you still have decisions to make. That's how it should be.
Okay, I don't like that last part. Okay, let me be clear. I don't like him I didn't hear the whole question. So maybe the question also had to do with tough cuts at the end, and that's why he's bringing that up. I feel like just the answer in a vacuum, the very end there is when, you know, your parents are preparing you that you're not getting that air hockey table for Christmas, you know?
Yes.
Right? So that part worries me a little bit. I will say this, and we'll know more in the next 24 to 36 hours. It's three, whatever, however many hours. It's 3 o'clock tomorrow is the deadline to make these cuts. This Dameon Pierce thing, and I can't believe I'm saying this about Dameon Pierce because he's so popular and he's a great dude. But if this turns into Dameon Pierce making the team and Cam Akers not making the team, this has the potential to be kind of the first thing that the fan base gets legitimately upset at D'Amico Ryans about.
Right. I think it's my first, it's our first fight, I think.
Yeah.
How strong is our relationship? We have to see if it can withstand our first fight. And there's kind of a baseball feel to this too. Almost like a Kyle Tucker, like, come on! Why are you guys so in love with Kyle Tucker? What are you even doing? I would imagine that 90% of the people who said that right now have actively denied that in their brain.
Oh,
they don't
yes.
even remember
yeah.
that there was a time when we
Sucked.
Were kind of, that people were disgusted that they
yes.
were, that Kyle Tucker was untouchable.
Trade him.
So, I mean, that's the other avenue you have to keep open is like, all right, man, maybe they just know and believe, and somehow it will click at some point, but it's hard. It's hard.
It is. All right, we're off and running on a Reaction Monday. We are under 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Cannot get here soon enough. Texans win on Saturday against the Rams, and now it's cutdown time. I would imagine we're going to start hearing about some of these cuts today. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media at 9 o'clock today, so maybe they start trickling out after that. So we'll see, but we'll keep it tuned here to Sports Radio 610. We'll have them all as they're happening here over the next couple of days leading up to the 53-man roster deadline tomorrow at 3 o'clock. The Astros, they had a weekend. They get a split in Baltimore. is it a split that we feel good about because it's against a good team, or is it an opportunity that was missed? We will discuss that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Astros, they're 4.5 games up. They split with the Orioles this weekend. So this is one of those series.
Oh.
This is one of those classic, on the one hand, this, but on the other hand, that series. Because on the one hand, it is the Orioles. They are a better team than you record-wise. You go on the road, you get a split. And that's, you know, you stood toe-to-toe with one of the other best teams in the American League. On the other, and you did it without Yordan Alvarez for three of the games. So no, you don't have your best offensive player, maybe the best hitter in the American League. You don't have him in your lineup, and you managed to still split. He was in the lineup on Thursday, but he missed Friday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday. Now, on the other hand,
what?
The Orioles scored 13 runs in this series, and 10 of them were driven in on three swings. Brian Abreu gives up the grand slam to cough up the 5-2 lead on Friday. Taylor Scott comes in for a very frustrated Framber Valdez after Jonathan Singleton kind of lollygagged a ground ball to first base that allowed the inning to stay alive. And Taylor Scott gives up a bases loaded double, I guess it was, cleared the bases. So that gives the Orioles a lead they would not relinquish. So the two losses, literally the runs that mattered, all came in on basically two swings. And your relievers couldn't get a guy out. They need to get one guy out. Get that guy out, and you win those games. And then last night, it almost was the same thing.
Yeah.
The 3-run home run from Urias, I guess it was. Thankfully, Alex Bregman and Yiner Diaz, back-to-back jacks, get him out of the situation.
Yeah, that was monstrous in the moment. And it's been... I choose to look at this through a positive lens just because, I mean, even Chandler Rome, who writes for The Athletic, he gets accused of, you know, maybe being overly cynical at times. A lot of people feel like some people feel like he's a hater. I mean, to the point where Dusty was, you know, asking him to go read some Camus to maybe have a different perspective on life.
On life, yeah. Yeah.
By the way, if somebody's recommending Camus as the guy to make you happy or whatever, it's a bit of an obstacle. That's like you got to work your way through Camus before you're... Because I took Dusty's advice, and it's you get there, but you got to deal with a whole bunch of existential dread beforehand.
Good warning, Seth. Good warning.
Yes. Yeah. So, but that's where it is with Chandler wrote a piece this weekend that honestly... It was almost like it felt like gushing praise of the fact that the Astros are even in the position they're in right now, given the rotating cast of dudes you've never heard of or maybe had passing knowledge of, and yet they keep getting it done. But then Abreu lets you down, or Taylor Scott lets you down, guys you don't necessarily expect to let you down. That, look, being 500 On the road trip at this moment? They're 500 on the road trip, right? Yeah.
They're 3-4. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Red Sox.
On the road
trip. Yeah, well, the Red Sox game was at home, so sorry. They're two. Yeah. The road trip is 4 games in. They're 2-2.
So they're 2-2 on this road trip. They're 1 game away from being over 500 on this stretch of going versus the Red Sox and the Orioles.
Yeah, yeah.
That it could be a whole lot worse, and the fact that those were... You know, other than the Thursday night game, I still feel like this is a scrappy, differently composed Astros team that's getting it done in different ways. But I have as much faith as them as I did when they're in the midst of their winning streak.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. Like these things are going to happen. The bullpen, the pitching staff as a whole has been incredible since the bad start to the season. So. To sit here and expect perfection the whole way. It's disappointing the way that it happened. The Framber one was the one that was really disappointing because it was so unnecessary. If Singleton just charges that ball, you're out of the inning. And Framber probably still has what would be a 9-game winning streak now since June 18th. Framber was visibly frustrated after that play. And I couldn't tell if it was, and he probably answered the question after the game. I think I actually saw his answer after the game where he kind of took collective blame for it. He and Singleton both, and Espada kind of blamed both of them too. That Singleton was a little nonchalant about fielding it. Framber was a little nonchalant about covering first base.
Yeah.
And so it's probably on both of them. So Framber, and I think Framber even said we when he was talking about it after the game. But that was a tough one. That was a tough one because Singleton nonchalanted that ball. And then Taylor Scott, who's been so good all year, like the wheels have come off. Slightly. I mean, his numbers are still good, but Taylor Scott hasn't been nearly the middle of the game hammer that he was earlier in the year. Yeah. So he gives up that hit to Holiday.
The one that was tough about Singleton and Framber is that, I mean, if it were different guys, if there were different players involved, it would be easier to excuse it as a misjudgment or something. Where with Singleton, I don't doubt his effort or anything like that. It's just I don't think he's, you know, he's not A plus as a guy that can actually charge that ball, perhaps. The base runner is he's got like dead center average MLB speed. He's not slow, he's not fast. But like Framber's got a history of not covering first when he's supposed to be covering first or doing it as Framber's the guy that I can't excuse in that moment. I'll excuse Singleton on the basis of just sheer ability. Framber's just got Framber cannot make assumptions. Right. Anytime Framber gets to a point where he assumes that this is going to happen or that, no, you need to be textbook and everything.
Yes. Last night's game, hey, look, man, there's 5-0 in Kikuchi starts. I know he wasn't great last night, but they're now 5-0.
Well, he only got 11 hours of sleep, Sean.
Yeah, that's not enough. He's a sleep enthusiast, man.
He's one of these guys.
I don't know how he
like
does
that,
it.
Just like Verlander and Bregman that have really latched on to the importance and power of sleep. Did he say he usually gets 14 hours of sleep a night, the night before a game?
I read this about him when they traded for him, and I don't remember. It was more than 12. I know that. I remember seeing 12 as a number, so it might have been like 12 to 14 or something like that.
I don't think, this is the thing I think about those guys who have talked about how much sleep they get. I don't think that's what they get every single night. You got to remember, baseball players' sleep schedule is pretty erratic. So given you every normal night you get to bed really late, and then when you're traveling, you're trying to sleep on an airplane after a night game and all that, I think they have episodes where they're catching up on their sleep, but and they commit to it. But I can't imagine that they're in bed for 12 hours.
What's your target each night for sleep?
Seven plus, ideally. If I can go a long stretch of 7 hours of sleep, then I get to the point where I'm usually waking up after 6.5 and feeling really good. I try to, my big thing is if I wake up with an alarm, then I know I gotta schedule an early bedtime.
There you go.
I gotta start. So I go to bed early until I stop waking up with an alarm because I typically don't need an alarm.
Yeah, I'm between 6 and 7, and then I catch up usually on Saturday.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do that this weekend because we had Texans, you know, like one of the weekend days, I'll go 10, you know?
You know, one of the things I've realized over time is that I can't use whether or not I feel tired as an actual gauge. I'm the same way with hunger. Sometimes I won't notice that I'm hungry until all of a sudden I'm flipping out on somebody for no reason whatsoever. And I'm like, oh, all right, I might be a little hypoglycemic here. So, and I don't flip out anymore, but you know, I get agitated.
Yeah.
You know, Sean. So... Can I tell you a quick airport story? Should I tell the story I told you? Okay. So, all right. So I'm so I was flying into Buffalo a little while ago, and I felt great. Felt just as fresh as a daisy. But when you fly into Buffalo, a lot of times you're on the, like, you go into the, like, the little regional jet hub of the airport. It's like the oldest part of the airport. It's got 7-foot ceilings. It's kind of depressing. And the gates are all like B3A, B3C.
Yeah.
You don't even have a dedicated gate. So I was at O'Hare. And I'm like, I've never been to F terminal before. And it was like F2 something on my gate. So I get to this part of a terminal, and it's a brand new, but it was like F1 through 3 in this little section. And I'm looking around for F2. I see F1 and F3. I'm looking at the opposite side of the concourse. There's no F2 at all. And I'm like, what the hell is, where is my F2 whatever? And I asked this lady, and I was like, hey, I'm at gate F2. Where is F2? And she said, there is no F2. And then my mind was completely blown because, like, all right, well, look, I'm a pretty seasoned traveler. Lady, my ticket says F2. And so I show it to her. And in my mind, I had read it like F21 or something. And she said, that's...
like it was a subgate of F2?
Yeah.
Because
I was in regional jet mode. And she said, that's... And she looked at me like with forgiving eyes. And she was like, that's gate F21. And I argued with her. I said... politely, I was like, no, it's F21. And she said, no, it's just gate F21. Gates F4 through 30 are down that way. And I've never been... it's the most embarrassed I've been in a long time. I've been more embarrassed before, but that's about the most embarrassed I've ever... I was stone cold sober.
Yeah.
And that was the moment I realized I was sleep deprived.
Right. Yeah.
That was how I knew, okay, I got to schedule some sleep.
You can't even blame, like, a language barrier or something. You know what I mean? Like, if it was an actual word, and you're like, oh, sorry, no, speak English.
I thought this was Arabic. Yeah, I didn't realize. I apologize.
No, it's numbers. Those are a universal language.
21. So there are numbers above 20, you say. I get it.
How long did you get chippy with her?
I wasn't chippy with her. I argued with her or whatever. Yeah. I was polite about it and everything. Right. I wasn't. But there was a part of me that was like, she just isn't getting it. she must be new. Look. She doesn't understand the whole subgate terminology.
I went to Cornell.
Yeah,
never heard of it.
Dude, that is exactly, Ben, Seth told me this story before the show. That's exactly what I said. I said Seth was probably, after that whole thing, Seth looked at her and said, I went to Cornell.
This is why I try to be as forgiving as possible on stupid mistakes that athletes make. Because sometimes in the game, you're just, imagine if I had a 30-second play clock when I was trying to find my gate.
Right.
I would have been yelling at the sideline.
Calling
timeout. It's fourth down. It's actually
funny.
Plenty of time and it's not fourth down.
That's funny. Someone said too many pills, Seth. No, Seth is clean, man.
I'm clean. Like I said, I hadn't had a drink in at least over a month when that happened.
Yeah. No, you're doing
good. I had just seen at O'Hare, they have a self-serve craft beer dispenser.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, this feels like the future.
Wait. And where did they have this? At O'Hare?
Self-serve craft beer.
Wow.
Like a tap. It's a tap. Like you go up and you pour your own.
Yeah.
It's a crazy world we live in.
Is it free refills?
If it depends on how much you trust this camera surveillance, I guess. Yeah. I can't imagine it is. I'm guessing you have to go up and scan your credit card.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they probably have a little.
And probably your license. I bet it has your license too. You know, because now whenever
the magnetic strip on there. Yeah. Yeah. Text message, Singleton has no room for error. He's a scrub and needs to do everything and anything to stay in the game. Well, that's not nice.
The first base, I mean, we're at a point where I know a lot of people thought it was, or think that it's ridiculous that they would think about putting Bregman at first base. And I'm like, if that's what saves his arm, are you honestly telling me you like any of these guys at first base better than Bregman? I don't care if he's short. He could be 4'11". He's a better option at first if that's how you got to get him on the field.
It was good to see him at third base this weekend, just to see him out there. So that was good, but you're right. Chandler had another piece. Chandler had two good pieces this weekend. The one you're talking about, which basically is like a... I read it. It was almost like it felt like it was. He was making a great case for manager of the year for Joe Espada in that piece you were talking about. When you when you see listed all the things that the Astros have gone through this year, I think he called them the most bizarre juggernaut in the in Major League Baseball. Chandler,
a bizarre
did.
Juggernaut.
The other piece he had. It was a game recap, but it was the story of the Singleton game. Was just how awful it's been at first base for this team this year. And that's where Abreu double screws you. Jose Abreu, that is where it's not just that he was so bad, but he was so expensive and they were so invested in giving him a chance, they didn't go find a plan B at first base. Like, once you cut him, it's like, okay, now you're out over your skis after you cut him, and you're like grab bagging with Singleton and DiCenzo and putting Dubon over there. They've played eight different guys at first base since letting Abreu go. That's incredible. He got let go at the end of May. They played eight different guys at first base in that time, according to Chandler's article.
That's what I thought about on that Singleton play, that Singleton / Framber play, was, all right, yeah, you know who probably just makes that an easy out at first is Bregman. He's never played first base at any level, apparently, maybe since Little League or so.
He said no affiliated level, so not...
No affiliated level, but he said. But then he said also amateur or pro.
Okay.
So I don't know if he meant, like, he hasn't... I don't know what he meant by affiliated,
Yeah, not a first baseman. But to your point, yeah, I think he would have charged that ground ball and touched first base on Saturday night.
I like, since we're so into experiments this year in both Achilles tendons and in baseball at first base, I like the idea that maybe if Bregman has that challenge of playing first base, that it makes him even a better batter than he's been as of the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah,
just like it dials in something to where he gets out of his brain a little bit and he's just unconscious at the plate because he's focused on first. Maybe a little bit, or, you know, I guess Jordan, you know, Jordan's better when he's playing left field.
Yes. Yeah.
Even in freaking, man, Camden Yards has never felt so much like an actual yard as when Jordan's out there in left field.
Dude, Dubon running into the wall last night? All I could think of was like, oh, God, thank God that wasn't Jordan. Sorry, Doobie. Oh. Thank God that wasn't Jordan.
We should have updated everybody, so...
We'll do it in headlines.
We'll update you on the potential car crash that happened in left field.
Yeah, we'll do it here in headlines coming up next. We got Texans, we got Astros, we got NFL news, contract disputes. We got it all in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the Astros just so we can pay off on
let's
the tease. Yeah, so we can pay off on the tease as to whether or not Mauricio Dubon is alive. He is alive. He survived.
He's alive.
He survived the run into the cement wall. I know, Ben, big round of applause from Ben Gary, our producer, for Mauricio Dubon. If you missed it, this is when the game was still tied. If you missed it, fly ball down the left field line. Mauricio Dubon, gold glove utility player, by the way, he had to run 130 feet to catch this ball, and he went flying into the left field, the sidewall in left field in Camden Yards. And according to the guys on the broadcast on ESPN, there is zero give to those walls out there.
Honestly, and I would say maybe it's hard to grasp 130 feet necessarily. That's like 43 and a third yards. So like basically imagine running a 40 as fast as you can. And how do you slow down? I hit a wall.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not a metaphorical wall, like your legs got tired. You hit a wall right at the end of your 40-yard dash.
And not even like the wall of a tent where the whole thing will just cave in if you hit it. Like that wall ain't moving. And so he was down. He was writhing in pain on the ground. Actually, he wasn't even writhing. Like he was still for a while. Like it was scary.
Yeah.
He ended up getting up, walking off under his own power. The report after the game was that he's sore, obviously, but nothing serious. It's not going to be out.
He said he felt like he got beat up.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, so all the test results came back negative, but I immediately felt sad because I thought of, like, I hope he doesn't know how to really have, like, be beat by a group of dudes.
Yeah.
Like, I had this image of a young, innocent 13-year-old Mauricio Dubon.
You mean like how
an altar boy at the church or something, you know, and like some kids roll him for his lunch money and just beat the crap out of him.
You mean like how he looks now? Like
yes. Like, can you imagine him at 13?
Yes.
The poor kid.
Yes, I can.
Dude, just be the object of every bully and some group of 16-year-olds beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, that is true. When someone says it feels like I got beat up, That's probably someone who's been beat up a few times.
Like his whole body.
Right.
Yeah.
Astros win last night 6-3. They split with the Orioles. They're up 4.5 games on the Seattle Mariners. They're in Philly the next three nights to take on the Philadelphia Phillies. Might be a day game on Wednesday. I'm not sure. It'll be Blanco, Verlander, and Hunter Brown in this. No, sorry, Spencer Arrighetti. It's confusing because the Astros at first put out a pitching rotation that didn't include Ronel Blanco. And Chandler Rome even tweeted out, like, doesn't look like Ronel Blanco's starting in this series. They originally had Verlander, Arrighetti, and Brown. It was a mistake. It was a clerical error. It is going to be Blanco tonight, Verlander tomorrow, Arrighetti on Wednesday. So we're into the 5 days rest era of Astros pitching right now.
Yeah, and Verlander's long, slow recovery, and where maybe it would have taken him a while to get back into peak form. It took him, what, about two innings to where he just... Yeah. Then he looked like he got stronger as the game went along in his first game back. So I'm feeling perhaps irrationally confident in Verlander.
Good. Yeah, he retired his last 10 guys the last time he was out there. So
it's a weird thing to say. I feel irrationally confident in Verlander.
In a future Hall of Famer, but he's...
You know what it is, and then it's because Yordan had this neck soreness too, so yeah. I hear neck soreness these days, and I'm kind of like, well, that sent Verlander forever, but Yordan should play tonight.
Yordan should play. There was a chance he was available last night if they needed him to pinch hit, and he should be back. So Yordan's thing looks to be just temporary. His neck issue, if you were out of the loop over the weekend, Yordan missed all three games, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with a neck issue. So that's your Astros. The Texans are in the process now of cutting their roster down to 53. One person we know will not be on the 53-man roster, safety Brandon Hill. He was the only casualty from Saturday's game that we know of. He's done for the year with what's being described as a significant knee injury. He was carted off the field. It happened in a weird situation. It happened on a punt. He was kind of backpedaling towards the punt returner, and he got shoved by a Ram, and his foot kind of got caught in a weird way in the field turf, and apparently it did some serious damage to his knee, so he will miss the season. Here was D'Amico Ryan's. As far as the game itself, 17-15, the final score, I know one of the things you said you wanted to see, Seth, even though it wasn't starters in there, was the Texans run the football. Even if it's the backups in there, let's see them run the football. They went for 6 yards a carry in this game. They ran for 156 yards. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the O-line in the run game.
Just from the sideline watching, I feel like our O-line did a better job of staying attached and finishing blocks today. Always have to go back and watch the film to see, you know, who stood out amongst the group. But I like how they work collectively today to allow us to run the ball.
Cam Akers specifically, when I'm thinking about the offensive line, that play where he cut back against the grain, I know it's tempting to think, well, okay, the offensive line didn't actually block well, but Cam Akers was able to make something from nothing. The backside offensive tackle on that play, who's the international player, whose name eludes me. Because you know what? He wasn't even on the game day roster. He was number 66.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even listed on the game day roster.
Okay.
He's the guy that gets the special exemption because he's international.
Killing something or other, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did a really nice job on that of the backside defensive end took the wrong angle. And when the end tried to get back on the right angle, he did a little Laramie Tunsil style mini tug. And it was perfect. Like, Tunsil is really good at the little withholding with offensive linemen. They'll let you get away with it as long as it's only for a microsecond. So that guy, the international player, gave the little tug, and the end had taken the wrong angle because he's supposed to be sealing the backside, and Cam Akers was off to the races on that. Like, little stuff like that. I saw more evidence of the nuanced stuff out of the backup offensive linemen. And the running backs in general... Like, Jawar Jordan, I thought, showed a really good grasp and feel for zone running. Cam Akers obviously had a really good day. I think British Brooks, in a lot of Texans fans' mind and my own, is the guy that's most exceeded expectations. I mean, he's got a level of athleticism and shiftiness that I didn't think he had in his bag. And they tried him out at fullback a couple times, or at least H-back or whatever. But... I think, like, if I had to choose right now, if my only choices at fullback were Troy Harrison or British Brooks, I'd be British Brooks all day long.
Yeah.
Harrison had a rough day other than his touchdown.
Yeah, we'll get into some stock up, stock down in the next segment based on that game. I'll tell you right now, and by the way, Killian, I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, but Zier, Z-I-E-R, R-E-R. That's the international player you're talking about, number 66. He's an offensive tackle. I told you earlier, I did my 53-man roster. I got it right here. I currently don't have a fullback on it because I think Andrew Beck is going to start out on IR. They yeah. can start out two guys on IR now, a new rule, where they can actually bring those guys back. So it's almost like two free roster spots
it
coming
used to
into
be,
the season.
After they had changed, they've changed the IR rules a lot. You know, it used to be everybody, once you're on IR, was
you're
out
done.
For the season.
Yeah.
But it still had been that if you were on IR at the beginning of the season, you couldn't come back at all.
That's
so
right.
They've tweaked that a little bit.
Yeah, you had to be on the 53 to be recallable during the year.
We're just hoping against hope that Christian Harris isn't one of those guys who's on that
Yeah. I had Noah Brown and Andrew Beck as my two, but that's knowing nothing about what the medical situation is with any of these guys as far as long-term. But my point with your Hairston and British Brooks, I don't have a fullback on the roster to start the year because I think Beck's going to be on IR. I think it's really risky to put Brooks on the 53 to be your fullback. You know, like that's just, he's picking up that position.
Yeah.
And Hairston had four holding penalties, as you pointed out. He was terrible on Saturday. So I think for a few weeks, if I had to guess, if Beck isn't going to be on the 53-man roster, if this injury is serious enough to keep him out, they're going to try to muck it along with Cade Stover and Brevin Jordan as their fullbacks for a few weeks.
Well, all right.
It's not optimal. I'm not selling you on it.
I know it's not optimal. I mean, some of it comes down to also, like, I don't feel like Damian Pierce should be on the roster. Oh. I think there's a chance he gets traded. And if you've got your actual starting fullback on IR, then it does give you at least, it gives you one extra roster spot to keep an extra running back. You know, keep Agumba Wale because of his special teams work. Keep Cam Akers and then maybe keep British Brooks and experiment with him and see how you actually like him as a fullback.
Yeah, and again, I have Pierce on my 53 right now, but I totally agree with your sentiment. You know, that I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And I have him on there because I think he's going to be on there, not that I think he deserves to be on there. Ja'Marr Chase back at practice with the Bengals amid a contract dispute. The Cowboys lose De'Ron Bland, cornerback, for 6 to 8 weeks with a foot injury.
Cowboys are the biggest team that's a mess and yet are going to win a lot of games.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, we'll do stock up, stock down for the Texans 53-man roster and we will do acknowledge me at 7:20. Cam Akers is going to get a lot of attention on this show today. I'm just going to do a little spoiler alert for you right there. So we've got that coming up in the 7 o'clock.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
4th and 3 at the 21-yard line of the Rams. Boyle swings it out right side. Cam Akers sheds a tackle. Spin move. Another spin move. 15. Another spin move. And it's a first down at the 14-yard line. Put him in bubble wrap.
Put him in bubble wrap, says Mark Vandermeer. They did not put him in bubble wrap either. He was returning kicks, Cam Akers. shortly after that, with a couple minutes to go in the game, he was returning the kickoff, or was at least, I don't know if he returned, I can't remember if he actually returned it or not, but he was in there to return kicks after the Rams scored that touchdown to make it 17-15 on
this
Saturday.
I felt like it was a stress test. You know, like when they want to see how, like, okay, we got a new brand of rubber band. Let's see how it does. You know, or a belt, you know, a belt for your car. Let's see how this radiator belt does. Oh. We're going to run it until it breaks.
You're talking.
We're going to run it for high RPMs and run it until
Cam's
it breaks.
Cam's Achilles are the radiator belts in this analogy.
That was the stress test, and it passed whatever his usage was the other night.
Dude, with flying colors, this whole training camp has been one big passing grade for, not even passing grade, like I would say exceptional grade for Cam Akers, who you just heard right there, who in the game, and we're going to do a little stock up, stock down here. A lot of people texting in saying, want your guys' thoughts on who's making this team. We're going to give them to you here over the next 45 to 60 minutes. But Cam Akers was the big stock up for me, Seth, in that game. And that was the play we heard right there was a catch on 4th and 3 where I don't know that he caught it in position where he would have gotten 3 yards, but it was he shook a tackler, which was really just that was more impressive than the 3 spins. The spins were sizzly, but the making the first guy miss, kind of the angle his body was at when he caught it was really impressive. Vandy's call on that though, when he was going spin move, another spin move, I'm like, is he gonna get the third one? And another spin move, I'm like, yes, Vandy, that's why you're the GOAT. Good job. Here was Cam Akers after the game, talking about what he showed everybody this training camp.
I feel good. You know what I mean? I feel good. I feel like I show people I'm still who I am. I haven't lost a step, and we'll just see how it goes.
Dude, you nailed it earlier. If you just brought somebody to the game and said, watch this game, and then pick out the guy who's had 2 Achilles tears in the last 4 years, or 3 years, actually. I know 4 years. It was training camp. No, 3 years. Training camp 2021. 3 years. 2 Achilles in the last 3 years. He would have been the last guy on the list. He would have picked.
I think so. I tell you what, the guy I probably would have picked if I had somewhere along the way asked, hey, how old is this guy, too, would be Case Keenum. Because Case was a little off.
It was a rough one. Yeah,
Case was a little bit off. I think that the guy whose stock might have been most up after that game was Davis Mills, just because I think in that game you could see that, all right, Case knows where to go with the ball. Could have had Mechie on a mega bomb that wasn't. Xavier Hutchinson had a really good game. Partly not just because of his production, but because just about every catch he had to make was a little bit off. And it was, I still do think Case ends up being the third string quarterback.
I do too.
Just because of knowledge and system experience, coaching ability for the other guys. But Cam Akers was everything I think that you would want to see if this guy has actually recovered. And it's impossible, even though this is an unfair comparison, I just always wonder, man, there are exceptions to the rule, and him even coming back from an Achilles tendon tear and making it a couple years in the NFL puts him as an extreme exception with running backs. There's very few running backs that come back and make it at all after Achilles tendon tears. I think of Frank Gore, who early in his career in college, and I think his second ACL, but anyway, he had 2 ACLs early in his career when he was young, and then went on to be one of the most durable running backs of all time. That maybe Cam Akers is one of these guys that just... He had a couple of, and that was back when Frank Gore tore his Achilles or his ACLs. That was back when it wasn't such a slam dunk easy recovery. So maybe he could be that exception.
Maybe he's built different, man. Maybe he's built different. I boil down the Cam Akers situation because I think, look, we're staring at the possibility that Dameon Pierce makes this team, having not played good football for this team in over a year, and for about a calendar year or so, and Cam Akers not making this team, having had one of the best training camps of any players offensively. If that were to happen, my big question would be, why did you bring Cam Akers in the first place? Unless they trade Cam Akers for a 5th-round pick
over the next
24 hours.
I thought it would have been a cool plan if you had told me about it in July when they first signed him. And I was saying, hey, everybody, look, I know the name it's got some flash to it, and you know that you remember his highlights, but he hasn't been the same guy, et cetera, et cetera. I was very cautious about Cam Akers, and I don't regret being cautious about it, but man, everything that gave me reason for skepticism has been disproven. So if they retain Dameon Pierce but trade away Cam Akers, and like they looked at that last preseason game as some kind of showcase for him, I'd be really upset about that.
Yeah,
if they keep Dameon Pierce as a thought of like, okay, look, we're waiting for it to click for him in this offense, I would still be skeptical of that. And maybe they're keeping him as the third running back. But if they did that and also traded away Cam Akers, this would be the biggest issue I've had with this regime of D'Amico and Caserio being paired up.
Yeah, I think so too. Of this, you're right. With these two guys here, I think there were some moves made early on with the team when they were trying to rebuild that you could take or leave. But this would be one of this pairing of Nick and D'Amico that if Pierce is a Texan come Tuesday afternoon and Akers is somewhere else, I think this will be like I think you put it great earlier. Like, this will be our first fight of the D'Amico Ryans era. Like, it's been a year and a half long honeymoon. Longer than a lot of honeymoons, but this will be our first fight.
It'd be the first time D'Amico farted in front of us.
Right.
You know? And we're like, okay, do I still feel the same way about this person?
But it's
But
it's like rancid and nasty. You know what I mean? There's nothing lovable about it. Like, it's not
a cute little popcorn.
Yeah, it's not
fart.
Just like one where it's the noise, but there's no smell. Like, oh, okay, you do fart. It's like,
check
oh,
your
God,
underwear.
I got to get out of the room. What's going on? All right, so Stock up. Good job, Seth. Stock up Cam Akers for sure. We'll see what happens. We'll see what I would expect. We'll start seeing moves from the Texans after D'Amico's press conference today. D'Amico's got a press conference at 9 o'clock today, according to the schedule the Texans sent out. I would imagine we'll start seeing moves after that. Maybe before. If we have them before and we have them before 8 o'clock, we'll tell you what they are. Stock up Neville Hewitt.
Here's a handoff to Scott starting right, and he's going to be brought down short of where he needed to go by Neville Hewitt. That's a lock. Bubble wrap him. He's going to make it.
Vandy's
as out. Hewitt can play linebacker,
special
and he's
team.
A special team superhero.
Vandy had he had the bubble wrap out in full force on Saturday.
I feel like Neville Hewitt would gnaw through the bubble wrap and go out and find somebody to hit. He's like, Neville Hewitt definitely needs a cone around his neck. He needs one of those dog cones to keep from...
I feel like Neville Hewitt would just flex his trapezius and the thing would just pop off.
Put him in bubble wrap and a neck cone.
Yeah.
I think I really feel like if Neville Hewitt played in 1997, he'd be a Pro Bowl linebacker.
He's
an old school linebacker. He is just hell on wheels against... Well, Dex Thomas was undersized and like kind of speed.
I just mean like a tackle machine kind of thing.
Okay. You know,
Yeah.
I think that I think he's on the squad, especially because special teams. The problem is there's a lot of guys now where there's more depth at positions than there's been in the past, and there's more guys like Gumbawale and Neville Hewitt where you can't just call all of these guys a lock because of special teams, because they are also competing with other guys who might not be as good at special teams but might be better at their position. So I hesitate to call any of the really good special teams players a lock, but I think that linebacker is thin enough right now that Neville Hewitt's definitely a lock.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if Christian Harris is not playing in week one against Indianapolis, there's a really good chance that Neville Hewitt is out there on first and second down quite a bit, you know, just based on his ability against the run. So I think I agree with Vandy's sentiment in that highlight. That's my point here, is I think he had a good game. It wasn't just that play. He was all over the place. There's a reason that Andre said guess who during that highlight, is that Neville Hewitt had made a bunch of plays up to that point in the game.
Plus, I hadn't watched the TV copy of it. Did he get away with a little bit of a mini horse collar on that one, or was it
on one of the plays he did? I don't know if it was that play in particular, but on one of the plays he did, and I don't know who the running back was. It might have been Zach Evans because he was getting a lot of the carries for the Rams. Whoever it was literally as he was falling to the ground, was pointing at his horse collar to the referee, like the guy's falling. He's like, he got me.
The horse collar, honestly, the horse collar is a way more nuanced rule than you would ever think it was. So yeah. I always hesitate to call something definitely a horse collar or not.
A few people weighing in here. Just going to mix a few of these in before we get to a couple more stock up, stock down. We'll do acknowledge me in about 10 minutes or so. Text message, if they keep DP, it's going to make me angry. I obviously hadn't seen the day-to-day at practice, but it's like they've insisted on giving him chances, which is fine, but it feels like it's taken away opportunity from other guys. That's, boy, one of my biggest things. On my podcast right after the game, Seth, where I do four winners, four losers, one of the losers wasn't Dameon Pierce himself. It was the entirety of the situation with Dameon Pierce, where I find myself now staring straight in the face the possibility that I'm going to get angry at two of the people who are my favorite people in this Texans organization, D'Amico Ryans and Damian Pierce, and probably maybe Nick Caserio too, if Damian's still on this team. There's been no evidence that he's better than the options they have right now.
It feels almost like a Lance McCullers situation, where a lot of people that just are angry at Lance McCullers, basically because he's he's a guy that's done great things for the organization, but he can't stay healthy, and people get angry at him over time. And likewise with Damian, it's not injury issues, but it's just his actual production. He goes from one of the guys that you love the most to where all of a sudden he becomes the object of all of your derision. And yeah, I don't want to feel that way about Damian. So the texter says that, he hasn't seen the practices. You and I have seen almost all of the practices that have been here in Houston. I've missed like two or three of them. I've been impressed with him in practice, but that's what makes me nervous. Because the running back position, as I say over and over again, practice lies about running backs. Because breaking tackles is a very, very big and important part of especially Damian Pierce's game. And he's not tested with that in practice. So he looks great in practice, but Damian's superpower is breaking tackles. So even when the blocking is bad, can he break some tackles? He hasn't really shown any aptitude for that over the last season plus this training camp. And I don't want them to be deluded by good practice performances by Damian Pierce. It's not as simple as that.
Yep. Last stock up, John Metchie.
Boyle gets the snap. He's got time, fires right side, hits Metchie. Winds to the outside, sheds a tackle across the 50. Nice burst of speed, close to a first down.
Well, I think he is rounding into shape and is becoming the player they thought they would have when he was drafted.
Yeah, Metchie weathered the storm, at least the storm that was coming from the media. I don't know if the people in the building ever viewed Metchie as being on the bubble or not. I mean, look, they don't view Damian Pierce, it looks like, as being on any sort of bubble right now. So who knows how they felt about John Metchie, who was just going through a period of a couple of weeks where he was dropping the ball and was having a tough time getting open. He's doing both of those things now. He's getting open. And that play right there, I can see why it got undersold a little bit. Like when you rewatch that play right there, the spin move that he made to the outside on that play, it is something where you watch a second time, you go, wow, that was really impressive. That didn't pop with me the first time, but that was a really impressive move to get away from a guy.
Honestly, Sean, it felt like he was a guard who was about to kick the ball out to a corner three, and then Euro-stepped his way, like spun in Euro-step, and then hit it hard towards the hole. Yeah. It was an impressive move. I think with Metchie, this is what I always tried to remember, looking at it from Nick Caserio's perspective, was in some regards, you almost have to look at him like a rookie, even though this is his third year in the league. The first 2 years, he was battling cancer. And really, even after he cleared recovery, it was still a tax on his body last year. That I think that there's a really good chance that they all along were looking at, okay, but he's making progress. He's just not quite there yet. And that he might have been safe no matter what, even if he had made this turnaround. But I think with this turnaround, and really, just like Damian, okay, the biggest thing is he's not breaking tackles, and I think there's a lot that goes into that. But with Metchie, he wasn't catching the football. He had so many drops. And even with a lot of the positives in practice, he still also had a lot of drops in practice. He's rectified that in the last couple of weeks. I think I'll be really surprised if both Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie don't make the team.
I'm 100% with you on that. There was another play where Metchie was wide open and might still be running if Case almost threw an interception on the play. Like Case threw it right at a linebacker. But yeah. Metchie, if you go back and watch that play, Metchie is wide open, running down a seam. So Metchie's on this team. I'm with you. Hutchinson and Metchie, I think, are both on this team.
I think the other guys, too, that I would put on there as not on the team, but stock up from that game was Johnny Johnson and Steven Sims. I think they both did things in that game where you can really appreciate their upside. And at least one of those guys, if they don't make the team or on the practice squad, if they clear waivers, I think. I enjoyed watching that game because the two positions where I think the most battles are at wide receiver and running backs you really saw those guys step up to
they
the plate.
Showed
I thought
up,
they all
man.
Played their butts off.
Yeah, yeah, great point. Great point. Yeah, they all showed up. I have Sims making it on mine. In part because of the
Special teams, right? That's another
game.
One where you're like, man, we got a lot of guys. It's good for special teams, but I don't know how many guys you can keep just because of special teams.
But he's a guy who can win a game for you on special teams, you know? Like if he's able
to return. Well, and I think he's also a guy that adds a speed element when there's injuries too in your receiving core, you know? Like he can open things up just by virtue of just being as fast as he is.
Part of the reason they averaged 6 yards a carry is he had one carry for 38 yards in that game.
Yeah.
You know, you take that one out, it's more like 5.2 yards per carry. All right, let's do a couple stock down. Dez King.
Ethan Evans, the punter, unloads. Dez King back deep for the Houston Texans and drops the ball. It's loose. The Rams fall on it. They've got it inside the 15-yard line. No sunshine to blame that on, and the Rams have the ball in the red zone.
He was just running before he fielded the ball, and it's going to be a big turnover.
That was a guy who is probably feeling the crunch of making a 53-man roster.
Yeah.
Trying to make a play.
I saw some people speculate that maybe the shaft of sunlight and the missing panel somehow did it. I went back and I did the geometry on it, Sean.
No chance.
I got out my protractor and everything. The hypotenuse didn't match up with the apex of the ball. He was looking at nothing but a backdrop of roof when he was watching that ball come down. So that was just a muffed play. That was a muffed punt.
Pythagoras is so proud of you right now, man. You doing that A squared plus B squared.
I'm more of a Euclides guy myself.
Are you? Okay. I'm just telling you. Yeah. I talked to Pythagoras, and he's really proud of you. Here's DeMeco.
He gets all the credit, but it's Euclides that really did
Pythagoras
that.
Pythagoras is a pub hound. Everybody knows that.
Euclides exists, everybody.
Here's DeMeco Ryans on Desmond King. How does this affect your evaluation of Desmond King?
Nothing is said. Like I said earlier, nothing is said on who punt return or who. Like, we have a lot of decisions to be made. We'll see where we end up.
Okay, well, there you go. So that's D'Amico's got his cards and he's holding them right up against his vest. Another stock down. This was one that had you and I and Clint and everybody else up in the press box looking at each other every time the referee would go holding number 34. We got four of those in the game on Saturday. Troy Hairston, aspiring fullback, and this is the real shame with this, is that the fullback position is kind of there to be grabbed right now by the throat with Andrew Beck out. Like, that's, and I know Hairston got into the end zone. I feel like there's any number of NFL players that could have caught that ball and turned and got into the end zone that wouldn't have held on four other plays in the game. And he missed on a few blocks as well. Like, man, there was an opportunity there. And touchdown or no touchdown, he did not take advantage of that opportunity.
He's had some really glaring misses in the blocking game. The actual, even if he'd had zero holds on that game, I would have looked at his work as a blocker over the last couple of weeks and thought, like, no, you can't go in trusting him to be your fullback.
Right.
He's whiffed a lot. So, he's been a little bit of an experiment because he was a college defensive player. And it's been learning over the last 3 years. He missed all of last season. But it's not working out, not to the point where you can keep him on as an experiment.
Right.
I think, like, British Brooks in the limited sample size I've seen, like, he hasn't had as many opportunities to miss blocks, but as a combo running back / fullback, I like the idea of British Brooks a lot more than Troy Harris.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Text messages coming in. If DP makes the squad, do y'all think less of DeMeco and Nick? No.
I don't think less of him at all. I think that every coach and every GM, they sometimes have blind spots for players. It happens all the time, no matter how great they are. And in my opinion, that's what this would be. Now, we talked about Kyle Tucker earlier. Look, a lot of people were frustrated with the Astros organization when they, deemed Kyle Tucker untouchable because it wasn't looking like Kyle Tucker should be an untouchable guy as a young player. That worked out for the Astros. It's just football's got a different timeline, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
It's got a different timeline and it's got fewer games. You don't have time to let some of these experiments play out.
Nope. Are we going to start text message? Are we going to start hearing about people being cut today? Yes, I would expect so. We've already heard some teams have already started cutting guys yesterday. So we'll start to hear about that. I said 9 o'clock. I said, real quick, Seth, I said 9 a.m. DeMeco meets with the media at 11 a.m. today, not 9 a.m. So you'll probably hear that during In the Loop.
Especially because I think, you know, these days it's more and more common that a reporter like Schefter reports that Joe Mixon is going to be cut. And then the Texans end up trading for Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
The Texans did it with TJ Yates back in the day.
Yep.
So you leak it out there that a guy's going to be cut, and it's almost like putting out the bat signal that, like, hey, we're open for business here on this guy.
Yes, absolutely.
So you put it out there today and give you some time to maybe work a sixth or seventh round pick swap.
Yeah, there'll be a few of those for sure. But yes, you'll start hearing about people today. DeMeco again meets with the media at 11 a.m., not 9 a.m., like I said before. 11 a.m., and I would imagine you'll hear that press conference today on Sports Radio 610 on In the Loop. All right, let's get to some acknowledgement. Acknowledgement from big performances over the weekend, big performances in general, people we admire. I'm going to give Cam Akers
acknowledgement.
One more piece of love. I want to acknowledge Cam Akers in the end of this run right here.
Akers is back in the game, and they toss it to him. Starts up the middle, cuts right, 30, 25, right sideline, 20. Knocked out of bounds.
Wow.
Inside the 15-yard line. What a run, Cam Akers.
Nice little kiss at the end of it as he trucks a defender.
The Texans posted a great shot of the Texans side. That happened right on the Texans sideline.
Yeah.
The Texans posted a great video short of the bench's reaction to that.
Yeah.
With Cam Akers off camera, and CJ is running down there, like flexing, like doing the downward flex and then the bicep flex, and it's so good.
Sean, I got to find you. I'll show you because I use it for a thumbnail for one of my YouTube videos. See, on the right after the initial play on the TV copy, CJ turns around. And he's got this smile on his face that looks exactly like the little girl standing in front of the fire meme. The little girl that looks like she's like she knows something about the house fire. That's exactly the smile that CJ had. And it was almost as like, yep, we know something about Cam Akers.
About Cam Akers.
Like, we've got a secret.
Yeah,
it was really cool. That was, man, and Cam Akers did it multiple times in that game. He sought out contact.
Yes.
It was really cool. I thought, real quick acknowledgement.
Yeah.
I'll acknowledge the entire Texans backups and guys competing for a spot. Go ahead and hit that.
Acknowledge me!
Those guys understood the assignment. Like, they played their butts off. I saw so many guys. Malik Fisher once, when they were zeroing him on the sideline after he had made a play, he went to the bench, and he just had this look on his face, like he was dialed in, and I'm going to make this squad. Whereas the Rams, Sean McVay is one of the most conservative coaches in the league when it comes to fourth down decisions. You might think, like, hey, here's this young, youthful-looking, energetic guy. He's probably all into the new stuff, right? No, he is. He's Marty McFly when it comes down to fourth down decisions. And when they chose to go for a field goal in a preseason game, a point blank field goal on fourth down, down on the goal line, pathetic.
That is bad.
Pathetic.
Yeah.
And then the quarterback there, the not Spurgeon win. I call him not Spurgeon win.
Yeah.
He's an Edmonton Elk. Usually in the preseason, if it's a starting quarterback and he tries to go for the first down, I'm like, what the hell are you doing, man? Like, don't take a collision. Just slide.
Yeah.
This dude's trying to make the squad. He gets a start in the final preseason game, and he slides, like, 2 yards shy of the first down marker.
So
what the hell
bad.
Are you thinking?
Yeah.
There was an attitude of timidness by the Rams that the Texans
no swarm.
Have.
We are swarm. You are no swarm. Yes. Jose Altuve.
Acknowledge me.
This is a pretty cool story. This is Altuve on Friday night. Hits a home run. Make it 2-0.
Altuve hits it well to right field, sending Santander back all the way at the wall. That ball's gone. Jose Altuve leads all hitters ever in batting average in this stadium, and he hits one out to right. Altuve with number 17 on the year.
Well, that's who Jose was talking about. He wanted to give a bat to a young fan. How about that?
So he hits a two-run home run.
Yeah.
And that's what he's worried about.
And I saw Joe Espada and Omar Lopez look back in the crowd like, who's he referring
to?
Look
at the smile. Altuve's the best.
He is the best. If you're wondering what that story is, there was a young fan, an Orioles fan, by the way, because the kid, if you watch that video, the home run, kid's wearing Orioles gear. But he, you know, went down to the wall right there, right next to the Astros dugout. And well, I'll let him tell the story. Here is the fan. His name is Chris. Ecstatic about this new piece of memorabilia that he has.
Okay, Chris, what happened?
I was like yelling from the Astros dugout, and I was yelling to Jose Altuve. He got on deck, and I said, if he hits a home run, can I have your bat? He hit a home run, the next pitch, he called me over from the dugout, and he gave me the bat. Shout out to him, he's a really nice man.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You hear the dad in the background. Thank you so much. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
It was, that was more than enough thanks.
He was great. That kid, I like that kid.
Yeah. I like that kid. I like that he's young enough not to have a social media history that you could that you could go back and find negative things that he's tweeted about.
Oh, he's like eight.
Yeah.
Right.
Nobody went looking for the receipts on this poor kid.
No, the enthusiasm was genuine. Here was
it was an orange bat. That's extra. Yeah. That's even it's cool to begin with, but the fact that it's an orange bat, it's unique in a lot of regards, but that makes it even cooler. It was a really cool moment.
Really cool. Really cool. Here's Altuve on the moment right here.
Kid was calling for the bat when you were on deck. What just went in your mind just to end up giving him the bat?
Yeah, no, he said I was going to hit a homer, and obviously last few days was a little tough for me, you know, not feeling great in the home plate, so in order for him to call a homer, and actually I hit it, was big for me, so I was happy, probably happier than him, and I just did, the only thing I could do was just give him my bat.
You got to understand, Jose Altuve also is answering this question after a game they lost. Like in somewhat cataclysmic fashion.
But he hasn't been hitting for power lately,
right,
you know.
Right.
I think he genuinely felt like, man, you know what? It's meant to be, because whatever it took, that little kid saying that maybe is what sparked me and got me some of my power stroke back.
Love
so
it.
So good for him. And the kid, to be fair to the kid, I was just joking about the social media history.
Oh, yeah.
He did go on to say, you know, that they drove from Long Island to go, I think, specifically to watch Altuve because he loves Altuve so much.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. That's a great story. So give him a second acknowledgement, Jose Altuve, Ben.
I
didn't realize he had the highest batting average in the history of Camden Yards. That's impressive, man. Good job, Altuve. All right, let's get to Jameis Winston.
Acknowledge me.
I know Jameis Winston's pep talks have been a big thing for the Browns throughout the preseason, you know, given the fact that he's not the starting quarterback of the football team, and yet he's the one that the football team and the fan base seem to be reacting to. Where have we seen this before? This is an all-timer from Jameis. Anytime you do a pregame pep talk that includes going to CeCe's Pizza as a kid, you will get acknowledged.
Hey, man, hey, Trey, it ain't just about having fun, man.
Yes, sir.
Remember the time you played your best football game in your life.
Yes, sir.
Remember the time after that victory you went to CeCe's Pizza and celebrated with the boys.
Yes,
yes, be real. Yes. Feel it in your heart, man.
Okay.
It's a long way back to Cleveland.
Yes.
Let's not leave it without a victory.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
So put everything you got on the line today. Let's have a game of memory, man. I remember. Let's go.
Remember.
Family number three. One, two, three.
Jameis is going to mess around and get a CeCe's endorsement, man.
That's pretty smart. I wonder if he I hope so. I actually would like it in this instance. I wouldn't look at it as like, damn professional athletes. I'd be kind of impressed if he chose CeCe's Pizza for a reason.
Hell yeah.
That maybe in reality it was Pizza Hut or something. CeCe's you go because of the buffet, of course.
Absolutely.
You got a group of kids, which is also you got a group of kids mobbing the buffet.
Yeah. Go in with a strong stomach, yes.
Yes. But, I thought this one, too. You know, my one criticism of Jameis Winston's speeches, aside from sometimes where they go a little too far out there, is the length of them.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you're getting ready to play a football game. You got kind of a limited, tight schedule. I don't need a 3-minute speech. That was a pretty short and concise one.
27 seconds. I knew that that's how you felt about these Jameis speeches, so I made sure this one was only 27 seconds. So.
Now, maybe it was just the camera angle. It didn't seem like there were that many players assembled for it.
Well, that's their problem. They're missing the show.
No, I got me wondering, like, okay, was this just one position group? Does he go around to, like, all the different groups and do ones?
Does he do multiple? It was the last preseason game, so maybe there were, like, 40 guys in street clothes standing somewhere else at the time.
That's true,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm just giving Jameis the benefit of the doubt because he's an American treasure at this stage of his career. They are none too happy with Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. That's the other part of this story. The Jameis part is the fun thing. The thing that's getting all the attention is that this Deshaun Watson didn't play in this game again. And it was thought early in the week that he was going to, and now he didn't play in this game, and they are angry about this.
And it's been 300-odd days since he's played football, too. 302 days.
It'll be 302 when they play the Cowboys in opening week, yes.
And So it's not your typical situation where you figure, well, we got to keep the quarterback healthy, but he knows what he's doing. He's played a limited number of snaps for the Cleveland Browns since they gave him the largest contract in the history of quarterback contracts.
Yes. 12 games he's played.
He's still the highest paid quarterback in a lot of regards. Like, that's how big that contract was.
He's got the highest cap hit for sure. It's like, yeah, $64 million.
These other quarterbacks, they try to figure out ways to bring the cap hit down a little bit. The Browns are very much in a position where they've extended and tweaked the contracts of all of the, like, almost all of their veteran players.
Yeah.
But they haven't touched Deshaun's because they know that we might need to get out of this as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah.
Because he's a weight on our ankles right this moment.
They're stuck for at least two more years. And then even if they bail after 2 years, they got $64 million more still sitting there. It's a mess. All right. See, we got a bunch of them here. I'm gonna save Harbaugh. Maybe okay. We'll do that in the last segment. I'm going to acknowledge Aiden Burr.
Acknowledge me!
Aiden Burr is the kicker for the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets football team. He did this against Florida State. Tied at 21. 5 seconds to go in the game on Saturday in Dublin, Ireland. Here you go.
44 yards away.
Joe Tessitore. You can see why Joe Tessitore has a new job as the announcer on Monday Night Raw, starting pretty soon, I think, if he hasn't already. But that was him on the call. Georgia Tech and Florida State opening up the college football season in Dublin. And Georgia Tech gets the upset over a Florida State team that still, in a lot of ways, looks like they're licking their wounds from being left out of the playoffs last year.
Yeah,
and getting
beat
by 60 by Georgia in a bowl game.
This is a guy talking a lot of smack about a boxing rematch or something, then going and getting knocked out in the first round.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you got screwed by the judges last time, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you just get knocked out. Boom.
Yeah. Danny Cannell, former Florida State quarterback, who I don't know what media outlet he's with these days. He's been with Fox and ESPN at various times. Somewhat outspoken. He
gets into it on social media.
He does. Because
he does. He crosses over into politics,
yes,
and whatnot, too. So he just, you know, he's out there. He's out there,
yeah.
So he battles on social media.
He likes the engagement. He tweeted this after the game, 4:01 p.m. on Saturday. Every single person who's harassing me on here will get it in return. I'm keeping tabs. Every single one. # DK receipts. I retweeted this and I said, this sounds exhausting.
Unless he really knows what he's doing there, like, just because he's trying to get engagement or whatever, I don't think that's the best mental health strategy.
No.
If you decide that one day you're going to beat the internet and beat social, I'm going to beat all the goons on social media, you've lost the war already.
Yes, yes.
So I hope for his own mental health that he doesn't really believe that he's going to take every single one of those receipts and do something about it.
Yep.
There's no way to spend your life, man.
No.
No way to spend your life if that's what you genuinely believe.
Hey, last one here, real quick. I believe Hunter Alexander is his name.
Acknowledge me.
He's the kid on the Florida Little League team who laid down the bunt that won the Little League World Series. This was a hell of a highlight. Take a listen to this.
With the runner at second base, Norton. He gets it down. Oh, it's perfect. They throw it away. Like Barry's going to win the Little League World Series championship. Chinese Taipei in shock. It was fielded and thrown to first base. Nobody was there on an incredible bunt by the last hitter in the order, Hunter Alexander. And for the first time, Florida are Little League World Series champions.
All right, so just to describe what went on there real quick. Game's tied at 1. It's in extra innings, bottom of the 8th. So that's extra innings in Little League. And, this Hunter Alexander lays down a bunt down the first base line to move the runner from first to second. And the first baseman comes in to field it, turns around, and throws it to first base. And there's nobody there.
Yeah.
Like, you're the one that's supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So the ball rolls down the right field line, and the runner on first comes all the way around to score. And Florida wins the Little League World Series. Dude, they win the Little League World Series. It was heartbreaking watching these kids from China just bawling over this. Like, that,
yeah,
what a way to lose.
Yeah.
To come all the way over from China for weeks and to lose that way.
That guy's getting, that kid's getting murdered on Taipei radio, I bet, this morning.
Oh, Taipei Talk Radio.
Or yesterday morning. Yeah. Or however the international dateline works.
Yes.
I don't know. It eludes me.
They're crushing
me. So, yeah. But, yeah, shout out to Florida. You taking to look, Florida. Florida sometimes lots of people like to make fun of the state of Florida,
right?
And look, they do things other than just meth. Okay,
yes. Yeah.
Sometimes those kids do something despite growing up with meth dealers as parents.
That's it. They step up, and for the first time, Little League World. That surprised me. First time Florida's ever won the Little League World Series. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Jim Harbaugh's view of what constitutes leadership is interesting. We'll get to that. And who would C.J. Stroud least like to get hit by? I enjoyed this question by Shelby Coppedge, the sideline reporter on Channel 13 on Saturday. We'll get to that. We'll hand the baton over to the folks at Texans Monday. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris will do that. That's coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A couple people corrected me. That's right. It was the pitcher who fielded that ball in the Little League World Series game. The first baseman was charging the ball and wasn't at first base. My apologies to the Chinese team. My apologies to both teams that I botched the final play like that.
I thought you said that.
No. I said the first baseman fielded it. It was the pitcher who fielded it. It's just the first baseman had charged the ball and wasn't there to catch the ball at first base. Yeah, so my apologies. My apologies for that. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
You're getting roasted in Taipei right now.
Big time, dude, and in Florida, apparently.
Or tomorrow.
They're awake, yeah.
In the great state of Florida.
Yeah.
However the international dateline works, you're getting roasted out of tomorrow or yesterday.
This story about the Chargers were in Dallas to play the Cowboys this weekend, and apparently like a dozen of their players and a few other staffers and other people, Dan Fouts' wife, who I guess Dan Fouts is on the Chargers broadcast team, and so they were there for the trip. They got trapped in an elevator for 2 hours at the Westin downtown in Dallas. And so they were in there for 2 hours. Eventually, the fire department got there, and they were able to like pull one of the panels from the ceiling of the elevator and pull everybody up through the ceiling and then drop them into a working elevator.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was a pretty harrowing experience being stuck in a crowded elevator for 2 hours. Jim Harbaugh was not in that elevator, but Justin Herbert was. And Jim Harbaugh is super excited about the leadership qualities shown by his quarterback in a tense situation.
That's a shared experience. I mean, brought them closer together. I just missed it, you know, being on that elevator. And it's like, I wish I could have been there with those guys, you know. And but Justin Herbert was, and the remarkable things that came out of it was, you know, to a guy, you know, Tarheeb, young rookie player, it's like, wow, Justin Herbert's a leader. I mean, he was a rock. You know, kept everybody calm. And Jerry Fouts told me the same thing. You know, pulled me aside after they got out, and just how great Justin was.
Yeah, there you go. Honestly, look. I don't think this is like proof positive that Justin Herbert is stands head and shoulders above humans in terms of his leadership ability and how cool and calm he is under pressure. I think most good quarterbacks are probably wired that way.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to handle pressure really well or various circumstances. Yeah, I always think of like fighter pilots are kind of wired that way. Think of the movie The Right Stuff, where they're putting them through all these grueling physical tests, and Dennis Quaid is just, you know, chewing gum and popping jokes and everything. Nothing bothers him. But I do think that if your quarterback were the guy that melted down and was like a blubbering mess, that's notable. I think that would be...
That's a cuttable offense.
Yeah, I think it would be hard. If there was some story about Justin Herbert literally peeing down his leg or something, then that's a tough one to come back from. That would be a bigger story, is if somehow he had fallen apart.
I think CJ would be amazing in a broken, crowded elevator. I think he'd be totally calm in that situation. So I think we got the right guy.
Who would be the worst quarterback in that situation? It would just be a frazzled mess.
I think
Osweiler.
Old Baker, maybe not the new version of Baker. But
old Baker Mayfield, you like try to fight somebody?
Yeah, old Baker would definitely have not been good in that situation.
I feel like Jim Harbaugh within minutes would have been laying out his plan for how they had to procreate because they might be the last people on earth.
You know who might not have been good?
Like, listen, we're gonna have to.
You know who might not have been good? Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback. Yeah. Remember, he used to get into shouting matches with Ditka on the sidelines back in the day.
Do you think Jim Harbaugh would insist on being the first guy pulled out of the elevator because of his the importance of his leadership?
No, no, not if there were women in there. I think he is a gentleman. I think he would.
That's true, yeah,
yeah, I think he would let the women, but he would be the first player out. I think. Speaking of C.J. Stroud, this was a good sideline interview that Shelby Coppedge did with him. She did her research, man. We don't have time to play the whole thing. I love this answer because when you ask players to give props to other players, there's always a hesitancy. This was C.J. Stroud being asked, who would you not want to get hit by?
I would say, like, pass, like, Ed Reed, or, like, Ray Lewis, or Troy Polamalu, like, one of the old players. I really don't, like, be fair to nobody. I don't think I'm only fair guy, so, you know. But I don't know. Getting hit kind of helps you, like, play harder. I don't know. I kind of like it.
He kind of likes getting hit. If you couldn't hear it there, the crowd noise was a little loud in the background. He said, I don't fear anybody except for I fear God. No current players on his list. That is to be expected. That guy's
yeah,
don't
yeah,
like
I don't
to
fear anybody.
Prop up current guys like that
I
way.
I fear God.
Yeah.
I like you always go back to DeAndre Hopkins and the Hard Knocks when he was telling, who was the Redskins player that he was telling?
Probably D'Angelo
God,
Hall was the one whose ankles
D'Angelo
he broke.
Hall, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
If CJ's anything like me and he thought of a joke that he then had to throttle back, which I'd spend about, I do 4 minutes out of every hour doing. I think the obvious answer is Quinnen Williams. I think he would have said, like, I'd prefer not to get hit by Quinnen Williams again. You hear me, Juice? So, like,
Quinnen Williams
kind of sucked.
We didn't play any of the audio from this, but Quinnen Williams is too busy getting his interviews cut off by Jim Rome on Friday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, maybe we'll get to that later this week.
Yeah, it was a funny moment. So we should start, I would imagine, Seth, start getting some cuts here a little later on today. D'Amico meets with the media at 11,
yeah.
And I don't know if we'll hear any before that or if that's when they start to flood out. They've got a lot of work to do over the next day or so. I don't know. What do you think happens with this whole running back situation? That's what has everybody talking here.
All right. I think that it's impossible to judge D'Amico's body language or his tone of voice when asked about Dameon Pierce after the press conference because, he could have just been saying the bare minimum about a player that they plan on trading, or he could have just been, like, he knows that it's an issue, that it's a talking point, and that it's going to be criticized if they keep him. So I have no idea which way they're going to go with Dameon Pierce. I do think that him being traded might be the best thing for Dameon Pierce himself. And also the best thing for the Texans right now. So I'm hoping, you know, and I'm not saying this with any kind of false nobility or anything. I really think the best thing for Dameon Pierce might be to be in a different situation on a different offense, and it would be the best thing for the Texans. So I hope that's what happens.
A lot of people are framing it as a Pierce versus Akers thing because Pierce didn't play and Akers played a ton in that game.
Yeah.
I have them both making it right. And if Damian's not traded, my 53 here, I have them both making it. Like Akers, they're not an either or necessarily. Dameon making it does, I would say, reduce the chances of Akers making it just based on how many running backs you're going to bring into the season. But I think Akers is going to make this team.
If Akers isn't on the roster, I'm going to be genuinely angry about that.
Yeah.
That'll be, even if they trade him, I will be upset about that.
Yeah. All right. So that'll be, we'll know a lot more answers tomorrow. Tomorrow, 3:00 is the deadline. Seth? Antibodies to you, Mike.
Antibodies and all of that to you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Good luck in Taipei.
Thank you very much. All right, we are done. We are out of time. Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, Texans Monday, they are up next. We will see you guys tomorrow at 6 a.m.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No
punches pulled.
From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.